The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Time's up. Put your pencils down because it's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Fenton.
Welcome, one and all, to another edition of the Star Seminar. Your co-hosts are two professors of cowbiology who have just been submitting their book orders and are working on their syllabi in anticipation of the start of a new school year. How are you, my friend, Dr. Danny Fenton?
I am doing great. It's so nice to have you back, after missing you last week. Doing good. I'm actually get to enjoy a nice glass of iced tea because of our guest. We're on a little bit different recording schedule today, so now I get to have a nice glass of iced tea. I don't like to drink caffeine too late in the day, so that's why, you know, I get to I can have tea now. I don't know how you are there, but whenever I'm trying to go to sleep, I have a couple of rules I follow. One of which is I don't drink caffeine late, and the other is I have this little sound machine that I have to have some noise, the background noise, to help me sleep. I cannot sleep in silence. So those are a couple bugaboos about me for me to get a good night's rest. What about you? Do you have any like habits or, you know, things that you do to help you get a good night of shut eye?
Oh man, this is such a pertinent question because I'm a really bad sleeper. I don't ever get a good night of shut-eye.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so as you know, I have been for the last 4 months, I'm now back home, but for the 4 months I was out in California getting my mom's house ready for her to return. She was in a nursing facility and doing a bunch of work around there so she could get back and you know, getting her a caregiver and all that sort of stuff. And so what that meant was that from like 6 a.m. until about maybe noon or 1, I was working my job on the East Coast, meetings and stuff, all on Zoom. I'm lucky to have a job that's remote. And then I would take a quick lunch and then I would work until, I don't know, 10 or 11 at my around my mom's house trying to get stuff done. So what that meant was I mean, for months, from Memorial Day through like this last weekend, I never got more than maybe 6 hours sleep ever, and more than 5, maybe only once or twice. And so I'm okay. Like I have a strong constitution. I can do okay without a lot of sleep, but the reality is I'm not a good sleeper anyway. I have a hard time when it's too hot. I have a hard time when it's too cold. You know, if I've eaten too little, I'll wake up hungry. And then I can almost never get back to sleep, especially during the week. On the weekend, sometimes I can get back to sleep, but in the week I can't. This morning I woke up at like 4:30, couldn't get back to sleep, and, you know, have a long day. So that's pretty typical for me. I guess the good news is that I function reasonably well without much sleep, but I know it's not good for me. Yeah. So, you know, I'm perpetually tired, and it's going to take me a couple months to recover from the effort it took to continue to do all that work when I wasn't sleeping, you know, in California.
Yeah. No, you know, I'm glad that you're able to function on, you know, little sleep. I feel bad that you have trouble. I tell you what, I actually don't function if I don't get good sleep. So it's, I get so irritated, or not irritated, but I'm jealous that people that can just like fall asleep within a room full of people, that they can go to sleep instantly. Yeah. I was just like, oh, I would love to have that skill. How do I acquire that skill? Can I do something to acquire that? But when you can't sleep and, you know, or you're just like tossing and turning, or you wake up and then just get thrown off, and it can affect, you know, your day. And then maybe, you know, you build up in your week. So, yeah, no, a good night's rest is very valuable. And I definitely value that.
I mean, I feel so good when I do get 8, and I get 8 so, so rarely. It's a shame.
Yeah.
But listen, we could complain about how tired and old and grumpy we are, but I'll tell you what, let's look on the brighter side and talk about what do we have on the show today, my friend?
Well, we have a well-rested guest, you know, being that he, you know, is in a different part of the world. So today we're going to have a little study group. We're going to bring out one of the Mount Rushmore heads of BTB, the cool one, OCC. And we're going to get to the bottom of some of these camp narratives, some preseason expectations, you know, and whatever he feels like talking about. You know, you never know with cools. So, and, you know, we also get to crack our knuckles and actually dictate a hypothetical letter for one Jerry Jones. So that's what
fun.
We got going on.
Well, let's get to it.
All right.
It is once again my succinct pleasure to welcome the guest of all guests, my good friend, One Cool Customer. Cool, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
So for those of you who don't know, I have no excuse for you, but Cool has been a longtime writer for Blogging the Boys, one of the best football minds out there. And I think, interestingly enough, for me anyway, that's precisely because he didn't grow up with the game. So he came to the game late. And I think because of that, he always helps me see it in new ways that are outside the sort of standard American media packaging that we always get. And so there's just years and years of startlingly original takes that I think in some ways were only possible because of his outsider status. So it's always terrific to talk football with you, to talk Cowboys football with you, and particularly because we have some questions about some, I don't know, some irksome threads that have been running through Cowboys Twitter, and I think we need an outsider to kind of give us a fresh perspective on some of these. So without further ado, let's jump into this, shall we?
You're an outsider, OCC, just so you know, you're an outsider.
And ultimately, if we're talking about outside of the standard American media packaging, that's a very good thing. So last time you were with us, it was mid-March, and we were right on the advent of free agency. So I guess the first thing I wanted to do is get, you know, kind of, you know, start back there and say, you know, from then on, because then, of course, we had all of free agency in the draft as well as, you know, the subsequent things. What's your feeling about the offseason since that point?
Well, I think like most Cowboys fans, I'm disappointed in free agency. Even though going in, I knew that the Cowboys weren't going to be particularly active, but I would have wanted, you know, maybe one or two nice signings. Right now, who knows if any of the free agents will even make the team? That's not a given right now. Mm-hmm. And the other thought I had on that was I was struck the other day when I read about the jersey sales this year, and there was not a single Cowboy in the top 10, which is unusual because, you know, usually we'll have somebody who warrants a top 10 a ranking. And I thought to myself, you know, in the NFL, you also get what you pay for. You get jersey sales when you invest in high draft picks. But you also get jersey sales when you invest in name free agents. And the Cowboys haven't done that. Haven't done that this year, at least, and not really in the past either. But the business model to make money in the NFL is to sign big names, to have big names on your team. And if you don't have those, you're not really playing the media circus. And that's what's a little bit surprising because, you know, the Joneses are all about the circus. And they let that opportunity slip. It would have been easy to sign a big name guy that had the money. Doesn't even matter which position. But if you're looking at jersey sales, well, the Cowboys not there, and that's not, I don't think that's what Jerry wants.
Fair enough. So let me ask you this. When you say you would have liked to have seen a couple of big name free agent signings, what are you talking about? So I guess I'm trying to get a sense of what do you mean by that? Because you've been following the team closely for a long time. They haven't done that in 10 years. And so I guess my question is, when you talk about big names, are you saying you were hoping they would go outside of the pattern they've established, or that just bigger names or different kinds of players than the ones they brought in?
Yeah, I mean, when I say big names, I mean more name recognition than real big names. So there was no chance that they were going to get somebody for $20 million, but, you know, maybe a $5 or $8 million free agent, some of the mid-tier guys. With some name recognition would have been interesting. And you know, Washington, the wide receiver they signed, I didn't know who that guy was. There could have been others with probably at a similar cost, but with a bigger name recognition. I don't know. But, you know, we won't get the mega buck signings, not since Brandon Carr or and then we got the other guys who were broken that we got at a discount. Mm-hmm. Like Hardy or McLean or whoever they were in the past. That's where I think, you know, they could have done something. And we have the discussion about kicker. Could they have done something at kicker at a fairly low price, you know, $2 million, $3 million, you have a decent kicker. But no, they didn't go that way either. So here we are.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask OCC a question, because I think a lot of people feel the same way that he feels, like, you know, we don't need something outrageous. Just give us, you know, one of those middle level signings. But can you, I mean, when you look at this roster, I mean, are there areas where you're like, you can tell that, yeah, I want to see something there. I mean, where would you throw money at if you did have a, you know, $8 million signing guy? I mean, is there a certain area you think that?
So for me, at the end, it always comes down, you start with your money five positions. Do you have a QB? Do you have an edge rusher? Do you have a cornerback? And do you have a tackle? And the main concern for me is that tackle. And you can have a serviceable veteran to come in. I think their strategy of banking their entire backups on basically on rookie tackles, That's a stretch, and I would have liked to see a good solid signing there, you know, and maybe a Jeremy Parnell type. It's not a big name, but it's a solid veteran who would have provided depth. That's one area that, you know, you can come in later and say, you know, it's very obvious if that goes wrong that should have been addressed during the season.
Yeah, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Dan and I ranked the position groups heading into the preseason games, and we ranked them 1 to 11, the 11 different position groups, and offensive tackle was number 11 for me. And one of the things I consider was the starters. I mean, I think their starters there are reasonably solid, but the backups are deeply troubling. I will say, though, part of me wonders if their strategy isn't to give the young guys as many reps as possible and to go and get whoever's left, because frankly, whoever's left might be just as good as a Ty Anseki anyway. And so, I think that's still a possibility.
You know, one of the names I've been thinking about a lot during the last couple of weeks is Miles Austin. Mm-hmm. And if you think of his story, I think he was 3 years with the team without really doing anything, and then exploded in his first season for, I don't know, 1,100, 1,200 yards, Pro Bowl, everything. So, And as we look also at the wide receiver group, which is in a similar position, yeah, there's a lot of guys there without names. You know, is Noah Brown the guy? Is there a Miles Austin among this team? That's something we as observers have no idea about, but the team might know, or the coaches might know. Now, hopefully, we have similar situations elsewhere where we have, you know, unheralded guys who'll come through. But we don't have a Miles Austin every year, or maybe not even every decade. So that's a lot of hope that you're trying to sell as a strategy.
I think it's really interesting that you say we don't know, because I think that's probably going to be a persistent thread that runs through this conversation, because I do think that's one of the interesting things about fans, and ultimately one of the frustrations of being a fan, is that there's so much information we're not privy to.
Yes.
And this actually leads me to this question, which is one of the other sort of persistent Twitter refrains that existed when we talked back in March, and it still persists, is that the Cowboys aren't even trying this year, that they're just like throwing it in the towel for 2022 and they're going for 2023. So what do you say to that from a different vantage point now that we have gone through the whole offseason, now that we're sitting here on the cusp of the preseason's final fortnight?
Oh, yeah, I dare somebody to tell that to Micah Parsons on the training field, that the Cowboys are not trying hard enough. I think they are. I think they might be. For us as fans, the frustrating thing is probably that they're caught up very much in their own, let's call it, business model or modus operandi, where they say, this is how we do it, and we will stick to the way we do it. We believe very strongly in developing our own talent, developing our own people. And yes, we understand it's frustrating because there are no big names, but nothing they've done this year is really surprising if you think about how they've done it in the past. Nothing.
I agree. And I will say one other thing about that. I believe that they have taken a look at their roster, and the fact that they actually have had pretty strong, if not extremely strong, drafts in 2021 and 22. And they look and say, you know what? We have a lot of young guys who are in that period in their careers where they typically, you know, NFL players typically make that big leap. And if they get big leaps from, let's say, two-thirds of those guys, they are going to be a significantly better team. And yes. I think a significantly better team primarily on defense, because that's where a lot of those young players are. And I get the sense that's where a lot of Cowboy fans are sort of missing out on the offseason plan. I think that they really, this is sort of in some ways a youth movement, but it's a youth movement that's bred from looking at the fact that they had an unusually good run here of drafts in a row, and they're a good young team, and they want to like clear things out and let the young guys grow.
Yeah, it's part of the model, for better or for worse. And I had a statistic the other day where I looked at the percentage of money that went to own players on the team within the top 10 or top 15 players or something like that, and Dallas was leading in paying their own guys. There is almost no significant money spent on free agents there. Of course, there, you know, sometimes you have a guy like Jaron Kearse who gets a second contract as a veteran signing, but otherwise they're low tier free agents they brought in to supplement some of the holds, and it's their model. But it also means, again, there's a lot of hope or a lot of things that we don't see as fans that have to happen for that model to work. All those draft picks, or as you said, maybe two-thirds of them, have to pan out. And if they pan out, they're in a super strong position. But it's, if you have to talk about guys who you might not even be able to pronounce the name yet because you haven't really heard them, then it's, you know, Nashawn Wright, whatever his name is, I don't know. I hope he pans out, but I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I have a theory I want to run by you guys, and you tell me if you think this is right. You know, with all this narratives about they're not trying, I feel like some fans are preparing themselves, and these fans are the Dak apologists to me. And I, of course, we all love Dak Prescott. We know he's a great quarterback. There's no slander will ever come from this fan regarding Dak Prescott. However, I think some people just are too enamored with Dak, and then they're just like looking to blame. And when they don't see the Cowboys bringing in more receiver help, and you know, and the tackle comment you made, I completely agree with you with on that one. But I think they're just kind of preparing themselves for, you know, for Dak maybe not to play like they expect him to play, and then they're looking for excuses, and then of course they're going to try to blame it on the Cowboys are just tanking, and it's like, you know, this is just, they want Sean Payton next year. They're not even trying. But I just feel like part of it is just they're a little bit unsettled about Dak. And I mean, how come nobody is having this, you know, unwavering faith in him that he does have enough tools, you know, to and enough arsenal in offense. There's no overwhelming faith in Prescott, and to me that bothers me, and I feel like people are just kind of, they're ready to defend him. So And I don't know, do you think that there's anything to that, or am I just like on my own there?
Well, I think I have a slightly different opinion, but I agree on the principle. I think there's a growing frustration among Cowboys fans that the team is not getting it done. We're waiting and waiting and waiting, and we always get the promise of this is the year where it's finally going to happen. We've built a team that's going to be competitive, and it just never is. And I think that's turning into kind of I don't know, even a sarcastic, ironic attitude towards the team. And you feel that more and more as you look across all sorts of social media outlets. There's a growing sense of frustration among the fan base about the team, because it feels like every time they could do something, they don't, or you know, they always fall short. And it's not like... the things we're talking about, everybody's talking about, and it's not like they're surprising, and it always comes back to the same kind of stuff. And people are growing weary of that. And yes, of course, I am of course a Dak apologist. So I belong in that camp. But at the same time, I understand the point where you say, you know, Dak is in his what, in his seventh year now? If at the end of his contract at the latest the team hasn't won anything, it will be time to move on from him too. Yeah. He's not going to be 36 year old in Dallas without, you know, winning significant playoff games.
7 years. They're flirting with wasting his career, just like they wasted.
Yes.
Romo's, aren't they?
Yes. Again. Yeah.
So I want to shift gears now from the offseason to what we've just been watching in terms of the Cowboys, which is training camp. You know, you have been to many a Cowboys training camp, and I've obviously been with you to many of them. Over the years, what did you learn to look for at camp, if anything? And was there anything that more casual camp attendees get wrong about what they are seeing or what they should be looking for at a training camp practice?
Yeah. So one of the things that particularly struck me this off season or this training camp is you got to know who to look at in camp. It doesn't make sense to look at players 60 through 90 or 60 through 85 or whatever the number currently is. And I was struck by I didn't watch the preseason game because it was in the middle of the night for me. Actually, I was on a plane while the game happened. But I was struck by how much frustration that first preseason game caused for Cowboys fans. And I was thinking they were watching players, most of whom will not make the team, perform on a field. And just a few days later, we had the joint practice with the Broncos, where we saw all the starters, or at least we read about what some of the starters did during that episode. Unfortunately, reality is you saw a game of backups. You did not see the padded practice of the starters, and that's where a information imbalance is happening. We're seeing stuff that's not representative of what the team will be in 4 or 6 weeks' time. I really tried to go back and read all the reports I could find about that joint practice from Broncos. And there just weren't that many. There were a few where they said, you know, Micah is great. And CD and Dak connected well. And something about the tackles. And that was it. So that's your typical article with 3 or 4 bullet points. So we're not getting the full picture of what's going on in camp. And also, as you sit there in training camp and stuff is going on, you so quickly lose count of who's where and which number and which player is that and who's 45 and who's 47. I remember, you know, sitting in camp with a roster sheet and trying to figure out which player was which and who was on the field right now. Is the second team, is the third team, is the starters. So it gets it's an information overload almost. And then you see a game on TV and it's the wrong guys playing. Draw conclusions from that are just not valid.
100%. I do want to talk more about the game and some of the things you were just sort of gesturing toward about the game. But before we do, one of the things that struck me, and you know, and I think it has a lot to do with just the way that the NFL and practices have changed, is that when I first started watching the NFL, it was when the Bob Greasy and Larry Zonka, Miami Dolphins were a good team, right? So this is in the early to mid 70s. That's when I first became aware of the NFL. And you know, I was a young sports fan. I would pore over the sports page every day. And that was the in the era where there were six preseason games every year, and the starters, i.e. Greasy and the Greasies and Zonkas of the world, would play in all six because they had to get in shape because they weren't, there was no offseason program other than basically drinking beers and chasing babes on the beach. And so, you know, that was really, needed. And so obviously the pendulum has swung in completely the opposite direction. Now the whole point of preseason is not to play your guys. And in fact, there's almost no tackling in camp. And it used to be that there would be tackling twice a day oftentimes. And so because there's no tackling in camp, the substitute for tackling in camp is actually the preseason games. So in some ways, like they really can't have those violent camp practices that we even saw in the Parcells era. You know, if you saw training camp in the Parcells era, the goal line drill was incredible. The earth shook. I mean, it was like, you know, the stampede of elephants versus a stampede of rhinos. It was incredible. And we don't see that anymore. We, you know, it's mostly just drills and there's a little bit of light contact, but there's almost no tackling to the ground, if any. And if so, it's always, as you said, like the guys who are at the bottom of the roster who they can afford to lose. And so we've totally lost sight of I think what the purpose of that final of those preseason games are for and what sort of function in the sort of arc of the NFL offseason they've replaced, which is those preseason games. Or not even those preseason games. I'm sorry. No, those camp practices where people used to tackle. And so we've accelerated our expectations for what this game can mean, when in fact the NFL teams have decelerated it so significantly that it's really just a glorified. I mean, it's not even. I wouldn't even say it's as elevated as the blue-white scrimmage used to be, but it's comparable in the sense that, you know, you don't want to play your starters. It's an opportunity for, you know, the guys who aren't going to make the roster to get some reps. So let's shift to the actual preseason game. So the Cowboys lost their first preseason game. You were sound asleep. Lucky you. 17-7 to the Broncos. And we're hearing a lot of consternation. There's a lot of hand wringing about the way the Cowboys played, particularly the penalties, but a bunch about the way the backs played, et cetera, et cetera. So what's your take on this? I mean, I'm not going to ask you so much about your take on the game because you were lucky enough to miss it. but I would love to hear your take on the sort of like on the reaction to the game in Cowboys land.
Okay. So the penalties obviously are an issue, but it links up nicely with a point you made. And I read the other day that training camp used to be 30 padded practices. Today it's 6 or 7 padded practices. And people are just getting, you know, their feet wet in these glorified scrimmages. Mm-hmm. Mistakes happen. You have a bunch of players who may not have played an NFL snap in their life. Yes, other teams manage it better, but I wouldn't get overly excited about the penalty issues. Wait for the starters to come and then see whether that's an issue. What I do think is it shows on a couple of key positions that we might still have issues. If you're nominally, the number one backup QB has a terrible day, you should be concerned. Cooper Rush, you know, maybe lost his number one tier. Maybe he never was the number one behind Dak. Maybe he's behind Greer. I don't know. We don't know. But if some of the key guys who you're hoping will be key backups don't perform in these games, then I tend to get concerned. I was concerned about Cooper Rush anyway. I think that that Minnesota game last year was a fluke. Remember, we released him. He went to the Giants. They released him. And only then did he eventually find his way back. That's not the CV of a successful backup QB in any way. But that's an area of concern. Some of the young guys, okay, they get burned. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they almost had an interception. Then they didn't. I wouldn't get overly worked up, but where you see some of the positions not working well at all, that's where I would get concerned. And tackle was an issue. The QB was an issue. Ben DiNucci then came in, and it was the second half of the first preseason game is almost meaningless. So I wouldn't overrate his performance either. Those were the things that stood out to me from, you know, observing from 8,000 miles away.
So I think you may have already answered this question, but should we ever be concerned about any outcome from a preseason game?
No, no, I wouldn't at all. I think, again, I think it's about looking at players in specific situations, and they are a much better way to do that is in the scripted practices. I was really I liked hearing that they went into the, I think it was a Chargers practice with 74 scripted plays. That's exactly what you should do. And against a live opponent just adds an extra component. Then you go back, you watch the film, you understand what's going on. I think, so there's two schools of thoughts, I think. There's the Ravens school of thought who think they need to win every preseason game. Okay, I understand why they think that. But I'm more in the school of, you know, try to mess up every single preseason game because the opportunity for learning is bigger. If you have this let's say this penalty issue in all four preseason games, I bet you the team will be highly motivated to fix it. If they had just gone along with, you know, 8 penalties and business as usual and won the game, the urgency to do something about it might not have been there. So I like the idea more of getting clobbered in preseason, but then being ready for the season, then, you know, coasting through preseason because you're playing your better guys, winning and then sitting in the real season and, you know, having to start all over again. But I guess that's just a philosophical point.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've talked a lot about like what we shouldn't get worked up about, what we shouldn't care about. And you touched on this already a little bit just now, but I really want to try to dial in for us fans to like really understand, like, what are the important things that, you know, we should be watching when we're watching the preseason. I mean, are there any things that we can learn and we want to see on the field during these games?
So one of the things that interests me the most in preseason is trying to figure out who are the guys that eventually make the team, who are the first team players and who are the second team players. So I traditionally, when I watch a game, I keep a chart handy to write down the numbers of the guys who do the first two, maybe three series. To understand, okay, who has a leg up in the camp competition, just to understand who the starters are. Then I would like to see. So I would focus in on the spots where I think I see a weakness to understand whether it's a real weakness or not. I'm not so much concerned, you know, in the past, Dak or the starting QB would have a series or two. That might be over this year. Dak might not play a single preseason snap, but he wouldn't be the one I would focus on anyway. I would focus on the, you know, the fourth or fifth wide receiver. Is he working? You know, what about the backup tackles? You know, do we have depth at corner? I'm really not concerned about how the starters play outside of figuring out who the starters are going to be, but then watching, are there some young, interesting guys, which they usually are, that's undrafted or late-round rookies, who are fighting for the last spots, and is there some interesting stuff there? Like this year, for example, I'm hearing a lot of good things about Darren Bland, the cornerback. Seems to be a nice find. Bell, the safety, I think we already knew coming in that he might be a good guy, so it's not that big a surprise. Houston, the wide receiver, is a guy that's appears on the cusp of doing things. But and one other thing that I find very interesting is I think that Leighton Vander Esch might be having a might be poised for a really good season from what we're hearing. So it's those kind of stories about not just fringe players, but I know what to expect of the stars. I know what I expect from Elliott, from Lamb, from Prescott, Parsons, but the difference at the end of the season will be the fringe players, and can they step up when they're called upon? And that's the interesting part for me.
Yeah, Rabs, is there anything when you're watching preseason like that you focus in on? And
what's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities. The greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
It was interesting listening to OCC talk about talking about like the starters and those kind of things, because it reminded me of one of the things that I do try to watch for in training camp. And I think maybe it used to do this as well, OCC, which is I paid special attention to the special teams periods, particularly when they were doing the punt and kick coverage teams, because that usually gave you a lot of information about guys they were at least auditioning for significant roles on the team. And so if you take a look at who the starters were, especially if they were just doing a walkthrough where they weren't, you know, that wasn't a lot of contact, they would give you a pretty clear indication of who the first, second, and third teams were. And you could learn a lot from that. Like sometimes you'd see somebody who you didn't see particularly like flashing during, you know, one-on-one drills or during 7-on-7, but they would be on this, like they would have a prominent role on the second team punt team. And you think, huh, okay, this is a guy who has a chance. And then oftentimes that guy would make the team. So yeah. I think that could be really, really instructive. And you want to do the same thing during preseason games, I think, too. If I rewatch this game, which I'm very, very highly unlikely to do, but if I do, I think what I'll do is pay special attention to the special teams moments, because if we want to know who players 45 through 53 are going to be, we'll get some answers about that when we look at those.
Yeah, the other thing I like to do is this is an old idiom, but it's proven very effective for me, is when you watch preseason games, don't watch the ball. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is what I like to do is I like to focus on one guy, because it's too much to watch all 11 guys at once. One guy, and watch him for 5 or 6 snaps. And I think then you get a good understanding of, you know, is this guy good enough, bad enough? How often does he get beat? Especially, you know, if talking about linemen, for example, defensive tackles, look at them specifically for 5 or 6 plays. And I found that usually I get a pretty good idea of how good they are. Then I focus on the next guy and the next guy. Because what happens with the ball, nobody's really interested. But watch a player in his position for a couple of snaps, and you usually get a good idea of, you know, is he passable or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can like even an offensive guard, you can see the athleticism or lack thereof.
Yeah.
If you watch him play after play. And that's actually, you know, we were saying earlier that one of the things I appreciate so much about talking football with you is the conversation exists outside this kind of standard American media packaging. And that's actually one of the things that I'm talking about, is the way in which the entire broadcast is focused on the ball. And what that does is it creates a sense of chaos, but that chaos breeds a sense of unknowing. So we actually don't have an opportunity to really focus in. Like, that's not the way that the broadcast is set up. You have to go outside the broadcast and really spend a lot of extra time to get that kind of information. Or you have to be very disciplined in the way you watch the broadcast, which is, you know, a little bit harder during a regular season game where the plays.
Oh yeah, when emotions run high, I cannot do that thing during the regular season, because then I want to win. I want, you know, push the ball forward. But the preseason game, they're so boring, to be honest. You know, I think it's much more interesting when you focus on a couple of positions, look at them. It's more rewarding for me than watching the game to win.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, I think that's, I mean, that's very well said. I mean, I admit that I've watched the game 3.5 times, and I do exactly as you described. I focus in, you know, first it was like Ball and Tyler Smith are right next to each other, so that made it really easy to watch those guys play. But you'll focus in on, you know, somebody on offense, focus on defense, and you just kind of redo it. And you get a real sense of how quick they get off the ball, you know, where they put in their hands, and how like Deron Bland, you know, you mentioned, he was doing a good job closing, you know, and you're able to see some of the details, you know, of how these players performed individually. And that to me is what I look for in preseason. I don't really know always what the Cowboys are trying to do as far as like when their game plan and what they're trying to accomplish with, you know, each series. But so all I can do is just focus on the individual players and just see, how they're moving, how's their footwork, is ball getting, is he getting wide, and things like that. And so that to me is, I probably won't watch the remaining preseason games in so detail, but this is the first one, and it's like we haven't had football in forever. So I found myself, well, I'm going to watch it again, and then I'm going to watch these two players and stuff. And I think that's really great. And you mentioned this already. You talked a lot about some concerning areas. I mean, are there any parts in, preseason hasn't shown us much, but are there any areas that you're like gravely concerned from what you've seen? You kind of mentioned offensive tackle. That's where it is for me. I don't know if you feel differently about it. Are you worried a great deal about any one particular position group?
So I am worried, especially about the offensive tackle. We know that Tyron Smith is not going to last the season, or it's almost a given. Anyway, he'll be injured at some point. And then, who steps up? And my the even bigger concern is because they don't have clarity on the offense tackle, they'll start reshuffling the line and, move the right guard out to right tackle and move Steele over to the left. I'm super concerned about that. So I would, that's my main concern. I have the hope, at least at wide receiver, that some of the young guys might step up. It's not an unreasonable hope, still hope. So I'm not so concerned there. I have zero concern about kicker because, hey, if the kickers don't work, we'll find the next one. It's not a big deal. We're making this up to be a huge thing. We change kickers mid-season all the time. You'll just find the next one if the old one doesn't perform. It's not a big deal. So that I'm not concerned about. I am concerned, and this is one that's been a constant for the Cowboys. I am concerned about backup QB. I think they have, over the past decade or decade and a half, they've had two good ones, Kitna and Dalton. And I think that's what you want in a backup QB. You want a veteran guy who can come in and win two or three games for you while the starter is out. But you can't put that on the shoulders of essentially rookies. So if Dak gets hurt, the season is almost done. Yeah. And that's not a risk you want to take. And I'd rather invest, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 million in a journeyman QB who can win you a game or two, and then try to save those bucks because you may have a developmental talent. And yes, I know the story of Tony Romo, and it's a fantastic story, but it's one that's unlikely to repeat. Yeah. So get a veteran journeyman. Get Fitzgerald in, convince him to come in for another last season. I don't know. But so those are my areas of concern.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because, I mean, honestly, my thought would have been like probably not agree with that take like last year. Because I figure like if Dak goes down, we're done. I mean, what's the point? I mean, it's great to have somebody for a couple, 2-3 games. But any extended period of time, let's be realistic, that's not going to make a difference. However, the Cowboys actually have a pretty good defense, and they actually can win. I mean, I could see us coming in with a Fitzgerald and winning some games. And so it's a little different now. So I definitely agree there. I'm concerned too. I mean, we only saw a little bit of rush. He didn't look very sharp. I'll give him his props from last year. He was solid, and he came in and he played well now in that game against Minnesota. But I don't know, and I haven't seen Will Greer, so I don't know. But if things don't get better from what we saw, in the first game, like a little bit better, I'd agree. I think there's a legitimate concern at quarterback. Rabs, I know you've already said, kind of expressed how you feel about what you're concerned about. I mean, but you got anything at all that worries you?
Not really, not yet. I mean, yes, I think that the thing that OCC was pointing out in terms of the lack of tackle depth and the fact that it's almost inevitable that Tyron Smith misses multiple games is concerning. I sort of feel like, however, that, as I said earlier in this conversation, that their plan is to give the young guys, and it's too bad that what happened to Waletzko, because I think they would have given him a lot of reps. I think their plan is to spend the offseason giving reps to the young guys and then bring a veteran in, because I think they feel like whoever's on the street right now is not significantly different than who they would have gotten had they tried to bring a veteran in March. And maybe even cheaper now, and certainly more well-rested, et cetera. So I think that, I mean, I believe that's their plan. The alternative is, and Dan, you had a tweet that a lot of people I know have referenced. You had a tweet about the different options at tackle, and one of the options that you put out there is, which is, I think, also there's a high likelihood that this is going to be their plan, was that Tyson Smith?
Don't even start with that.
What's his name again?
I'm not editing it again for you, Rab. So.
So Smith, their first round draft pick.
Oh, you were really asking?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were making a joke about Tyler Smith.
Tyler Smith, thank you. No, I can never remember his name. I think the plan is that Tyler Smith is going to he'll sort of swing out to right to left tackle, particularly if Tyron Smith misses any number of games. If it's for a game or two, they probably won't reshuffle, but let's say something happens where it's very clear that veteran Smith is going to miss some time. I think they'll take rookie Smith and come out there. In which case, then the question really for us is Connor McGovern a better left guard than whoever the veteran on the street is a left tackle?
Yeah.
Right. And so, I think probably right now they believe that may be the case.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, and for the record, for anybody that doesn't understand my demeanor on Twitter, but that wasn't actually a list of suggestions, but more of a list of, I mean, just to show the lack of answers that the Cowboys really, mm-hmm. this is what we'll have to deal with. These are the options if something like that happened. And I fully expected them to sign a veteran veteran swing tackle by now. And maybe they still will. I mean, they have time, but I am a little unnerved about that situation. So I don't know. But I have one last thing, and this was actually inspired by our special guest today. I want to know. So if you wrote a letter to Jerry Jones after the 2002 season, and you began with, "I hate to say I told you so, Jerry," what do you think it would read? So OCC, you have your letter. All right, just let us have it. What would you tell Jerry?
Okay, the first thing I would tell him, and I'm trying my hand at a little bit of prophecy now. The first thing I would tell him is you should have signed Tony Pollard and Dalton Schultz while you had the time. I'm not very certain that either of these players will be in Dallas next year. Mm-hmm. And I think we missed a chance to sign Pollard for certain to a cheap contract. Once he hits the free market, I think people are going to pay him a really, really good contract that the Cowboys won't be able to match because they can't pay Elliott and Pollard. And I think Dalton Schultz, he's going to, if he has the year that everybody's kind of expecting or hoping for, he's going to command top dollar. And the Cowboys this year tried to, shortchange him. Then David Njoku got his contract. Dalton Schultz is going to cost in excess of $15, maybe $17 million next year in a contract. And that might be too big for the Cowboys. They could have had him for a lower number this year if they had acted quickly. First point. Second point, you should have done, despite what Rams just said, you should have done something at offensive tackle. I think the moving Tyler Smith to the left as the emergency option, banking everything on a rookie. Yes, he's a first round rookie, but that's a big risk that you're asking. And going with that, I think I would have said you should have made sure that you provided better protection and weapons for Dak Prescott. You're paying the man $40 million. He's going to be the key to the entire season. Have you done everything to ensure that he's successful? The Cowboys have this, or the Joneses maybe, have this thing where they think if they pay a guy, a huge contract, he is going to perform even better than he has done before. That's not going to happen. We know what we have in Dak Prescott. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not a bad QB by any measure. He's a good, solid QB, but he needs people around him. And if he doesn't have that, he's going to fail like every other QB in the league. Just because we're paying him $40 million doesn't make him a better QB. And that's sometimes something, I think that Joneses did the same thing with Romo. When they gave him his $100 million contract at the time, they thought, okay, we just bought ourselves a superhero who's going to do it all by himself. And I think we're going down that stretch again. So that would be my third point. You should have done everything to ensure Dak is successful, because you know we might get lucky and the defense saves the day, but that's not the plan with this team. We're offense, and lucky to be anything on defense. So those would be probably my 3 points. Plus, show more cheerleaders. Always a good idea.
Man, okay. So Kohl's, you know, there's a lot of paper that you use there. We're going to have to put 2 stamps on that one. So, Rabs, we're going to put yours through priority mail since you're, you know, so important. What would you, your letter say?
It's very one simple thing, which is that, and I think OCC, you and I have talked about this before, how the Joneses fluctuate in terms of their offseason plan in many respects in response, that's the word I'm looking for, in response to how the previous season has gone. So when they have a good season, they make the playoffs. I think that they tend to be like, all right, we got a great team. We don't have to do anything. And then they have a bad season. They're shocked into or out of their complacency. There's a sense of urgency, a sense of purpose to their offseason. It's not like, as you said earlier in the conversation, Cool, it's not like they're going to go out and get a bunch of $20 million free agents. But it just feels like they're trying a little harder. They're embarrassed. They've been publicly ashamed, and they try a little harder. And what I want is for Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones to treat every offseason like the Cowboys just finished 4-13. I think if they did that, they would build on good teams. And I think that that's part of what is frustrating Cowboys fans is it doesn't feel to many Cowboys fans that the team was as good as it was last year because of the way the season ended. And so I think that the feeling is we need to do a lot to get this team back up. And it feels like the Joneses are like, what are you talking about? We won 12 games or whatever many games they won. And so we're good. All we got to do is just let it ride. And so it seems like every time they do that, Jerry gets a little complacent. He spends a little bit of time looking for people to pat him on the back, and they end up having a dip. And that's one of the reasons I feel like the Cowboys have been so inconsistent year to year. I mean, the league demands inconsistency year to year, and it's built to ensure inconsistency. But Jones doesn't do anything to combat that.
Yeah. No. I mean, you know, you've heard me say this before, and I actually don't have a lot of issues with the Cowboys front office, and I like their approach. I think that, you know, they do believe in the guys they have. And you talked about how these, you know, younger picks from the last couple drafts, you know, they're going to start to you know, take steps forward. And so I'm glad they don't panic, and I'm glad they don't overreact and do things. And I support them there. But if I were to say anything negative, and you know, Jerry opens a letter, you know, after a another disappointing finish for the Cowboys, it would be, I told you that McCarthy guy was not the right head coach. So that's what my letter would say. And it would say in a big print, hire Dan Quinn. And because I don't know, I feel like the Cowboys, you know, they'll statistically, they'll probably not win the Super Bowl. They'll probably, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I do think they got one team in their division that's going to give them a little bit of trouble, but I think they'll make the playoffs, and you know, statistically they'll lose, and then when that happens, they need to explain themselves. And I think if it could be because they don't have the best head coach in the league, you know, and it could be some, Mike McCarthy could do something silly. He's done some silly things, and I don't think necessarily that he's the right guy, but you know what, who knows? I'm definitely pulling for the guy, but that's what my letter would say. Goodbye. Good riddance.
So would your letter just basically be a picture of Mike McCarthy at his fattest with scrawlings over the eyebrows or something? Or
I don't think I would go that far. I don't want, you know, I'm sure Jerry gets a lot of letters like that already. I think McCarthy is the one piece of the Cowboys that I don't loathe the guy. I mean, he's better than, you know, a handful of coaches in the league, but I don't necessarily like him too. And I don't have a lot of problems with the Cowboys. I guess, you know, it's almost a little bit nitpicky. Unless they just completely, you know, wet themselves with this swing tackle situation, I feel good about this team. But if I'm going to pick, I don't really care a whole lot about their head coach. I like their defensive coordinator better. I think he's more inspiring than.
So let me ask you this: when was the, and this is a question for both of you. When was the last time they had a head coach that inspired you?
Well, you don't want to ask me that.
Ourselves. And to be honest, I think I was on the Jason Garrett train for a while.
Yeah.
I liked what he brought at the time. His first two or three years. So much so that to this day, I keep talking also to my team at work about the process and stuff like that. I think he wore out his welcome, but, Parcells was the one that, really brought not just a sense of urgency, but questioned everything. And I think that builds to the point that you were making, Danny, about McCarthy. I'm not feeling the sense of urgency, the sense of we need, are we doing the best we can to win every day? That type of mentality that Parcells had, that's what I'm missing. So Parcells would be my go-to guy to say that was the last time that I really felt something was possible. He also didn't deliver in the end, if you look at the results, but at least it was possible.
Yeah.
He basically rode one miraculous year in 2003. And they made the playoffs in his final year, but, you know, they weren't great. They sort of squeaked in as a wild card. And they were never really, they were better. He left the roster in good shape. I'm with you on Jason Garrett. I feel like in some ways we were mesmerized by Jason Garrett largely because we compared him to his predecessor, who was arguably the biggest doofus the Cowboys have ever had as head coach. I think he rivals Dave Campo in the sort of, you know, the on the doofus meter.
Switzer, he's got to be mentioned if you're talking about doofus.
Switzer for many years was a really good coach. I mean, I know he wasn't as good a coach.
Really good college coach.
In his last years. I'll take Switzer over a lot of the other guys they had. I would. So I guess the question then becomes, why do we have this litany of coaches like this? And so you were saying you don't have any problems with the front office, Dan. And I will say this team will always be held back because the ownership will never, unless they absolutely, absolutely have to save the franchise, hire a coach who will question the way they do things, because to them, they want a coach that's going to make things comfortable more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so McCarthy comes in and makes things comfortable. Garrett made things comfortable. Obviously, Wade Phillips is not capable of rocking any boat. And they were miserable when Parcells was here.
Yeah, and that's why Parcells is the right answer, because, I mean, like you said, I mean, you knew it was his team. And one thing, too, that we got to give Parcells props for is, you know, he had, with his experience and everything, he had really good assistant coaches. And I think that's the thing that I would have loved to get Jason Garrett to have the same opportunities. Like, I think Mike McCarthy is in a great situation. I mean, if he's got, the Cowboys have a lot of good coaches on this football team. You know, if you look at, you know, Joe Witt, you know, and just breaking down, you know, it goes more than just Quinn and Kellen Moore. And so I feel like Garrett, you know, he went through a bunch of cycles. It's not to say he didn't have, but, and when he did, the Cowboys were actually pretty good. So, but That's the thing. If McCarthy cannot string this together with what he's got, that's just, I mean, they're still making mistakes. And with some of the way that the Cowboys approach it, like with OCC was saying, with the sense of urgency, and then, you know, come out there and taking penalties serious and not blaming officiating and stuff. I mean, if they don't do that, then what is he good for? So, but yeah, I mean, definitely Parcells. I agree there, but I do.
I have a kind of a trivia question for you, building on this Parcells theme. And you just mentioned the assistant coaches. So my question to you is, how many of Parcells' assistant coaches during his time in Dallas went on to become NFL head coaches?
All right, let's think about this. We got Peyton. We got Peyton, Sperano. Yes. We got Haley. Oh,
yes.
You got Zimmer.
Yes, that's four. Think about Tampa Bay. Todd Bowles.
Yeah, Todd Bowles was here, huh? Wasn't he? Yeah. Was he a DB? Was he his defensive backs coach?
Secondary coach. Mm-hmm. We have two more to go. Two more.
Two more to go. You give us hints with teams?
Okay. One of them had a one-year stint in Cleveland. 2019. And he was the tight end coach in Dallas in 2006.
I have no idea. You're going to have to help me on this
I can't.
Okay. Freddie Kitchens.
Oh, right. Okay.
The last one was the Chargers coach from 17 to 20. Anthony Lynn was the running back coach from 2005 through 2006.
That's seven guys.
Wow. Seven assistant coaches who move on to become NFL coaches. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are great assistant coaches, but, you know, that was a stacked coaching staff. And since then, so that's the follow-up question, is since then, how many Cowboys assistants since 2007 have become NFL head coaches?
What's his name?
Eberflus.
Eberflus.
Eberflus, yes, Eberflus is the correct answer, but there are two more
There's two more?
There's two more.
Went on to...
So the first one is so obvious, you won't get it, of course. It's Jason Garrett.
Oh, of course, right. Yeah.
Fair enough. He was promoted in the job. And the third one and final one is Rich Bisaccia, who was interim head coach of the Raiders when Gruden was sacked.
And he's still in charge there, right?
You know, pardon me?
He's still the Raiders coach now?
No. He moved on to, I think, Green Bay. He's the special teams coach in Green Bay now, I think. Parcells brought in seven guys who went on to become future head coaches. And then back to Rapp's point, the front office or the Joneses got involved in selecting some of those assistant coaches. You know, think about
Ryan.
What was the name?
Rob Ryan.
Rob Ryan, but also who was that old guy we brought in as a defensive coordinator?
Monty
Kiffin. Kiffin. I mean, so since then it's been three. Technically, only one really made it out of the assistant ranks into a real NFL head coaching gig, and that's Eberflus. And even he was brought in by Rob Ryan. He was not a Cowboys hire, if you will.
No.
That's a big disparity, and maybe part of the issue overall. Maybe we just don't have the quality of assistant coaches that we often think that we do. Remember how everybody wanted. What was his name? Chris Richards to become the next defensive coordinator or even coach. I'm not sure he's even in the NFL anymore.
I think he's might be an assistant coach, a position coach somewhere. I'm trying to think.
But I think he was out for a year before coming back.
He didn't get a job right away. They weren't battering down his door. I really think that was one of the failings of the Garrett administration. He's a DB coach for the Saints right now. So I think that was actually one of the failures of the Garrett administration was his inability to to build a coaching staff and to, you know, to build a coaching tree that bore any fruit. It really is an indictment. I mean, he was working against his head coaches a lot of times. I really get the sense that there were a couple of years there where the season was derailed, not by injuries or not by tensions, you know, among the players, but because the coaching staff couldn't get on the same page. And I think that is part and parcel of the ownership group and the way they approach things. I will also say one last thing about Mike McCarthy. I feel like this coaching staff, and whether that's McCarthy or not, is an open question, because as we said earlier, we don't know. But I feel like this coaching staff does a much better job of identifying role players in sort of like positions 40 through 53 on the roster, or 35 through 53 on the roster. Guys who can come in and they have a skill set that they can take advantage of. I feel like way more often now I look at guys who are in those roster spots, and if they come in for a couple defensive snaps, they make a play, you know, they make a play on special teams. They may not play a lot, but when they do play, they're asked to do something that they do well. And I get the sense that he has a lot more clarity about what he wants from the roster, and has communicated that to his coaches and to the scouting staff, and they've gone out and found guys. So I think this roster is deeper, and it's not even necessarily that it's deeper in terms of talent. It's deeper in terms of skill set that they can actually use on game days.
Yeah, I agree there.
And I really think that on some level that's in alignment with like the ability to build a coaching staff. And I feel like that those were the areas where Garrett ultimately just really struggled, and I think that was. It proved his undoing in the long run, that and his, you know, his cowardice. Anyway, listen, we should wrap up. We've had you on for plenty of time here. All right, folks, if you want to get a hold of OCC, follow him on Twitter. He's at OCC44. I think he's still occasionally gracing the pages over BTB with his prevarications and pontifications. Is that true?
Occasionally, yes.
Occasionally. Not often enough for my liking, I'll tell you that. OCC, it's always a great time getting on and talking Cowboys football with you, my friend.
Yeah, and if you stumble across one of his articles, you know, he won't waste your time. So definitely check it out for sure.
Everything's a must read.
It's always great talking to you. Cool one.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. It was great fun. It was great fun.
Oh, it's nice. I always like talking to OCC. He's, you know, I probably told you this before, but, you know, when I read his stuff, you know, he always injects humor into it. And I always find that extra nice when you're reading something and one of the writers has a nice little sense of humor. And OCC has that. So definitely for sure, if you ever see something that he's written, it's an auto read for me.
I don't know if you've ever done this, but I tend to reread OCC's posts and actually frankly his tweets with a very slight German accent, and I find that it just enlivens everything for me, because I feel like I can really channel him, and you're right, he has a very wry sense of humor, and so that accent somehow allows it to be brought out just a little bit when I'm reading his posts. But yeah, his stuff is always so excellent, and honestly, like, the fact that he's not writing anymore is a real loss for Cowboys Nation.
Yeah, that's definitely good stuff. He always brings good stuff. Well, that is all we have for today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging Voice Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like us to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, camp battles you're looking for, what you're looking for in the preseason game, or do you have trouble sleeping? Let us know what your latest nightmare. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24, and Rabs is at Rabble Rouser, spelled RABBLEROUSR. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that is all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue. We will catch you later.
Class dismissed.